Hi, I'm Charlie, and this is Stereo Hysteria. Our November Artist of the Month, Mark Breyer, is a Los Angeles-based musician whose intelligent and melodic songwriting was honed in the Chicago suburbs in the late 60s and early 70s, as part of a band called Brevity, which also included Rick Vittenson of our August Artist of the Month, Athanor. Later, Mark moved out to the West Coast, where his songs became the driving force behind Skooshny, a critically acclaimed, yet perennially obscure, studio-only pop band. More recently, he's been releasing music under the name Son of Skooshny, that gives his songs more lush and layered textures. Mark visited me in my own home in the Chicago suburbs for a career-spanning interview, which we'll be hearing over the next hour. But we'll start things off with the lead-off track from last year's Son of Skooshny EP, Mid-Cent Mod, a song called Dizzy.
You had the new pneumonia. My vertigo has come and gone. Together they conspired to leave us way too tired. With low magnesium, I'm still dizzy some. Why am I still dizzy? But nothing adds up when you do the math. When more is less, you use subtraction. Reduce this to a fraction of what it could become. And I'm still dizzy some.
Thanks for talking to me.
Well, my pleasure, Charlie. Thanks for your interest.
Could you talk a little bit about your musical background? Like, where did you grow up and what was the first music that really spoke to you?
Yeah, that's an easy one. I grew up in the north suburbs, Chicago, and Everly Brothers were my first biggest influence. I listened to them all the time. Still love them to this day. I think everything I've ever liked over the years was strongly influenced by them. My brother and I used to stand on the hearth, I think it's called, of the fireplace in the living room and do lip-sync shows for my parents to the Everly Brothers. I think it was called The Best of the Everly Brothers. Mm. So that was my first huge influence.
And when did you pick up a real guitar?
That's a good question. I think I was in third grade and I wanted to be like the Everly Brothers. So there was a record store in town. They taught guitar in the basement. Mm. So I was sort of the runt of the school class, just a short little kid. And they started teaching me guitar on a regular guitar. Mm-hmm. And after a lesson or two, the teacher decided I was too small for a regular guitar. Mm. So they gave me a three-quarters guitar, and I had a temper tantrum. I went home and cried and said, I don't want a three-quarters guitar. I want a real guitar. They were recruiting people for the school band, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to quit the guitar. I don't want to play one of these three-quarters, and I started to play the trumpet for the school band. Little did I know that a few years later, John Lennon would come out and make himself famous with a three-quarters guitar. So had I stayed with it, when the Beatles hit, I would have been an accomplished guitar player, but I had to start all over again.
That must have been such an exciting era to grow up musically.
As I say, the Everlys were huge, but the things that came after, later on, the Spector era, mm-hmm. I loved that. I listened to WLS, Top 40 Radio, yeah. all the time, and my brother and I used to pick up the Silver Dollar Survey mm-hmm. at the local record store every week, and we'd memorize from 40 to 1, the song title, the artist, and the record label, and then we'd quiz each other back and forth mm-hmm. to recite the list from 40 to 1. So we knew the top 40 literally backwards and forwards.
When did you first start a band of your own?
I was pretty shy, and I don't remember starting a band and when all my friends were. I was sort of the tag along with their girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I think my first real band wasn't until 69, 70 or something.
And that was Brevity?
It was Brevity with Rick Vittenson, later of Athanor. And
who I might add is sitting in this very room.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
I was still too shy, but each of us at the time was writing songs. Mm-hmm. And I was comfortable with the writing end of it, but not with the recording or the performing end of it.
Okay.
So we called the group Brevity because the first three letters of each of our names, and then we added a Y after it, so it was Brevity. And we recorded a bunch of home demos. Well, they were home for Rick because it was in his living room. Mm. I think we wound up taking those demos to England to look for the record contract. It didn't happen, but we met some interesting people over there. We met with Muff Winwood, Stevie Winwood's brother, who was the drummer from the Spencer Davis group. By the time we met with him, he was the A&R guy, I think, at Island Records. Mm-hmm. So we had a good meeting with him. We met with a few publishers over there, and everybody said nice things about the band, but no deals. Mm. Later, we went into the studio in Chicago and made some demos and sent them to a friend of ours out in California, Jeff Peters, who later became, among many, many other things. He's worked with a lot of big artists over the years, but he was with the Beach Boys for about 20 years as their road sound engineer. He used to, daytime, take them into Hollywood and go to various labels and bring our Brevity tapes and then call me at night and tell me who liked it, who was considering us, and that sort of thing.
Did anything ever happen with those? Did they ever get released?
They didn't get released. I hope one of these days they will. But at the time, the closest we came, which was a bizarre thing, it was literally a bizarre thing, because it was the label that Frank Zappa was on. It was
Bizarre Street.
Exactly. With all the things on those labels, with Lord Buckley and
GTOs
and who else? Zappa and
Wildman Fisher.
Yeah. Some of the strangest, most eclectic things out there. They told us they were interested in Brevity, which was sort of lightweight, power pop kind of, and we didn't know what the attraction was, but we were very grateful for the attention. Mm-hmm. And they actually said we liked the first four tunes, I think it was, and asked us to go back in the studio and record a few more. Mm-hmm. And we did, and that the second time around, I took them out to California, my first trip out there ever. And we took them right to Bizarre Strait. I sat in the office with Herbie Cohen, and he listened, said he liked it, and they'd let us know. Nothing happened, but that was the first glimmer of hope.
It's now my pleasure to present a Stereo Hysteria exclusive, the first public airing of one of those early Brevity tracks, a lovely tune written by Mark and sung by Rick, called Come See Paris in the Fall.
Doesn't get letters, so she collects them. Doesn't doesn't see the light of day, so she collects lamps. Never had a friend, instead she collects dolls. Well, she's never seen the world, so she covers her walls. And on her bathroom wall, come see Paris in the fall. She's got the wrong book, and she's lookingly loving the wrong mother's child. Says it's a mistake any mother could make. The lighting is poor and my glasses aren't clean. I'm getting old and my mind often fails me. My rests have been few and so far in
to the West Coast?
I think it was a couple years after that. David Winogrand is the drummer in Brevity. He was from California but was living in Chicago when I met him through Rick. Rick was working in a record store and he said, there's this guy who comes in here every day. You got to meet him because his musical tastes are very much like ours.
Mm-hmm.
He played on the Brevity recordings and then he headed back to California. And when I was out there shopping the new batch of songs, he introduced me to an old girlfriend of his named Nancy. And Nancy and I eventually sort of hooked up, and she decided she wanted to live in California. So I said, I'm with you. Mm. So that was 73.
It was soon after that that Skushiny started up, right?
I think it took a couple of years. Actually, when we first moved out there, I was credited as producer for the first Athanor single, Inner Space and Graveyard. Mm-hmm. I don't think I had started Skushny yet. I did handle the business end of getting the Athanor single mixed and pressed. Sometime after that, I think I moved back to Chicago for a year or two. That's what it was. My first relationship, Nancy and I broke up, and I said, well, I guess I'm going back to Chicago. And I think David had moved back here by then also. And we decided, what should we do? Well, let's start a group. And I was writing my own songs, and then we both moved back to California, and shortly thereafter, I think this was 75. I was going back and forth between colleges, too. Mm-hmm. I was studying Russian. And I studied in Chicago, moved out to Pasadena, continued there, came back to Chicago, then moved back and finished up at UCLA. And by then, David and I both were back there, and we started kind of sneaking into studios. Jeff Peters, who I mentioned, was engineering for us and kind of sneaking us time in the studios, and we started the first batch of Skushny songs recordings. We had one song we did in 1971, I think. It was a brevity recording, so Rick did the rhythm guitar and the lead vocal, probably some background vocals. Gary Gand and Joan Bernstein did the electric guitar, lead guitar, and keyboards, respectively. David played drums. Actually, that recording of Cakewalk was on the first Skushny EP from 1978. Mm. And it's also one of the very few exceptions for something that was based on my experience. That was a fantasy song about a janitor pushing a broom who fantasized he was a hockey star. Mm. And that when he was pushing the broom, he was actually shooting the puck into the net. So it was a crazy song. And when I moved to California, we were trying to think of what can we do for this new Skushny project. And I think David suggested, why don't we just do Cakewalk and you can sing the lead? Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. You can still hear Rick's lead vocal in the background. We didn't re-record the song, but we did change it up a bit. And then I think Jeff Peters augmented the Gary's lead guitar. So now it's sort of like a weaving lead of... And then there was another guitarist there, so we have three interweaving leads and solos on that song.
Originally released on Skushny's first EP, on their own imprint Alien Records in 1978, this is Cakewalk.
Wear your number on my back, so what I make believe, you're the best and that's a fact, and everyone can see, that it's gonna be a cakewalk. It's gonna be a runaway. It's gonna be a cakewalk tonight. Here comes Davey down the ice. It's gonna score once, then it's gonna score twice. And it's gonna be a cakewalk. It's gonna be a cakewalk. It's gonna be a cakewalk tonight. Picture on my wall in color large as light, 5 feet and 10 inches tall. I get strange looks from my wife, but it's gonna be a cakewalk. It's gonna be a runaway. It's gonna be a cakewalk tonight. Thank you.
the musical influences that were around that time, like what was driving the songwriting?
Well, I mean, as I said, Everly Brothers, I think in some way or another, always influenced me.
Just with the harmonies?
Yeah. Verse, chorus, a bridge thrown in there. Mm-hmm. Great harmonies. I will not claim that our harmonies ever approach theirs. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's ever have.
Well, they had that brotherly bond.
Oh, gorgeous. Sibling harmony, and they wrote the book. They influenced me. Of course, when the Beatles came out in the line of harmony singing, they took the next step, so I'm sure they influenced me a lot. I was a huge Kinks fan, and a lot of the British groups. But what I knew then, and I know even more over the years, is that the Byrds were, I keep saying the word huge, but I mean, if I had more time and energy now, I'd come up with more diverse adjectives to use. But the Mr. Tambourine Man album wowed me. So along with the British invasion, that L.A. folk rock, primarily the Byrds, influenced me a lot. So when we started doing the Skushny recordings, all of those things added to it. Because we weren't a performing band, for some reason I would cite Steely Dan saying, you know, we can use weird lyrics and we can be a studio band and we don't have to go out and play and we can get a record deal and make a living. And I was making a lot of assumptions that weren't necessarily true, but they guided us.
You eventually took matters into your own hands and pressed up an EP and a single in the late 70s?
Exactly, yeah, we did. That do-it-yourself power pop new wave trend had started, and David, actually, the drummer, was really the business guy. I mean, I just liked listening and writing, and but he would say, you know, this is what's popular now, this is what you do, you know, you start your own label and you get it to Bomp magazine and they'll distribute it for you. And he was always on top of that. In fact, over the decades, he was always the one to say, you know, whether it's do it yourself or internet or whatever the various things that independent musicians do, he'd be the one that would know what to do. I didn't care about the business thing. He did. So we started our Alien Records and chose four recordings we thought were best representative of what we did, pressed them up, got them to Bomp Records. I think Bomp gave us a really good review, too. Mm-hmm. So then we decided we'd let them distribute it for us. I remember their founder, very influential, Greg Shaw. I think I might still have a letter he sent me when he first heard our demos saying, I usually don't write back to the bands, but you guys are so far above most of the things that I get that I wanted to personally tell you. And he did also say, I think not playing live is definitely holding you back. So that's some maybe words of advice we should have heeded at the time, because decades went by and we really never started playing live. And although we got some popularity and cult following around the world, it was certainly not large scale.
Here's the A side of the band's second release, a 1979 single called You Bring Me Magic.
Shoulder.
Where did the name Skushny come from?
My studies, my university degree is in Russian. Mm-hmm. The first week of classes, as they were introducing us to the language, they gave us a list of, I think it was 32 adjectives. And for years I would test myself, how many of them do I remember? But mm-hmm. the one that stood out to me, Skushny, which means boring, I just liked the way it looked in the Cyrillic alphabet. I liked mm-hmm. the sound of it. I liked, I suppose, that punk attitude.
Like self-deprecating.
Yes, exactly. That was the name. And we've been criticized for it over the years. You know, everything from ridiculous or great music, but they really could come up with a better name. So that sort of thing.
Well, it's a name that it rolls off the tongue and people remember it, for better or worse.
I hope so. I think some people do remember it. Yeah. Yeah.
After the 70s, my research is a little sketchy. Like, what was the career trajectory for you?
78, we released the EP. Got the really good, primarily underground sort of reviews. Mm-hmm. It encouraged us to record two more in 79. That was the single. Then I think what happened then was in 1980, David had been to recording engineering school. Mm-hmm. And he met an interesting guy there who was wearing a Peter Hamill button. Mm-hmm. He's Vandergriff generator.
Yeah.
And David was a Peter Hamill fan. These two guys became friends, and the guy he met is Michael Penn. Mm. And Michael was a great musician and pop songwriter. I was looking for a day job, and I found one at a photography studio, pretty loose place where you could kind of dress how you wanted and very laid back. The guy who ran the place was a guy from Northern Ireland by the name of Brian, and Brian was a bass player. Brian hired me. I recommended David. David recommended Michael Penn. Michael Penn recommended his girlfriend at the time, Gabriel Morgan, who is a great singer and songwriter still. And we became not only co-workers, but kind of a work band. Mm. So every chance we got, we'd kind of play there. So, and we also used to go up to Michael's family's house. He was still living at home at the time, up in Malibu. And we'd do these informal recording sessions. Some songs I had written recently, we'd just kind of say, what do you want to do this? Let's have two or three of us play on it. Michael would put on Chamberlain and maybe a lead guitar, and I'd do my rhythm and lead vocal. Sometimes drums were on there. Sometimes it was just Michael and I. And what started out as just demos, experiments, wound their way onto the first Skushny album that came out in 91, I think it was. Okay. And in the meantime, David and I've neglected to mention Bruce Wagner, who was an important part of Skushny. He was not only the lead guitarist, he wrote some of the songs, co-wrote others with me, and he was a multi-instrumentalist, so he played bass sometimes, keyboard sometimes, trumpet, I think, on one, various things. So during the 80s, Skushny was kind of on hiatus, and David and Bruce would get in some of these psychedelic kind of punk bands, trying to remember their names, SS20 and... Mm. Dirt, I think, was one of them. I don't remember. So anyway, 80s was sort of a loose transition period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Featuring Michael Penn on guitar, background vocals, and the pastoral sound of the Chamberlain. Here's a song that appeared on Skushny's 1991 self-titled collection called Dessert for Two.
Dessert for two on a blanket on the sand. I was swept away by the poison of your hand. Fan of flame and stake of thank you. perhaps too tired to fly away. Collapse, the weight of the sky breaks their strength, but I do not know why. Dessert for two, I'm a glutton.
I wanted to ask you about your lyrics, because a lot of your songs have very specific language, and the way you phrase your vocals, like you'll hold on to a vowel for a long time, and you won't be sure what the word is until you break it off with the consonant, and it really makes you pay attention to the lyrics in a way that some other like highly melodic bands, you just pay attention to the pretty melodies. What are your lyrical influences? Does your interest in Russian play into it?
That's a great question. I could answer it in a few ways. One thing is, when I was during my Russian studies, I was not an avid reader in high school. I kind of struggled through and skipped some required books. I didn't develop a great hunger to read. But in college, I had to. I mean, I was there to study the Russian language, but literature was part of the major.
Sure, yeah.
So the great bulk of my reading was Russian literature, and it was in translation. I think Constance Garnett is the name of the woman who did the Russian to English translation. And certain phrases would jump out at me, and arms akimbo, and I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones. And I think she was British. I'm not sure, you know. So it wasn't really the Russian original so much. And it probably wasn't American English. It was probably Britishisms that Constance Garnett put into it. But these phrases would jump out at me. So I'd try to throw them into the songs. But all of my writing since I started have been based on personal experiences. I mean, maybe like one or two exceptions. But I don't know how to write songs that are fictitious. I don't know how to say, well, let me write a song about a guy whose girlfriend leaves and then he goes to a bar and picks up somebody. I don't know how to do that. So everything, it's kind of a purge. What's the word? You know, it's to get out incidents, episodes, experiences that are troubling me. I need to...
Using songwriting as a therapy tool?
Exactly, yeah. That's what I do. So almost all of my songs are based on in true experience, from experience. But the language I use is not so much from literature anymore. That got me started in the 70s. But now it's more, I do work with words a lot to use, I'll say, poetic techniques or whatever to make them more vivid. I like doing mood paintings with words. And my phrasing, I don't think it's modeled after anybody. So if I do elongate syllables or keep the listener in suspense, it's not intentional. I'm sure people like Graham Parker or Ray Davies or, I don't know, Gene Clark or people that I've listened to a lot probably have subconsciously influenced me, but I never model myself. Only one exception, I did a song called Masking the Moon that I think was my homage to Graham Parker's Squeezing Out Sparks album.
Okay.
So I think that one was somewhat intentionally modeled after him. But otherwise, I just have my own style. And if I have the effect on the listener that you described, I'm grateful for it. But I don't know where else it comes from.
Here's one of my favorite Skushny songs, which originally appeared on the 1992 Holy Land EP and was remixed for the 1996 album Even My Eyes, a song called Private Jokes.
I scrape the shoebox clean of leafy greens to buy some peace. I've been saving pennies in a vitamin jar for hopeless days like these. I wanna sit and still the pangs and drain my mouthwash cap shot glass. Spoon feed myself some broken compliments until the feeling cracks. I'm out of touch and out of plumb. I'm out of luck on linoleum. I laugh until I'm lying numb on the floor. So private jokes don't seem so dumb anymore.
question at hand. How much sanity does one man need? A 440 down for a pint in town at half God's speed. It's a solo racing race for places, tripping on trees. I'm out of touch and out of plan. I'm out of luck on linoleum. I laugh until I'm lying up on the floor. Too far, the jokes don't seem so dumb anymore. I tell myself invented jokes to console me. Punchlines from gutter rhymes make me roll.
Throughout the 90s, there were a few Skooshny albums released. Were they all compilations of stuff that you had recorded, or were there some that were start to finish conceived as an album?
The first one came out in 91, which was definitely a compilation of pretty much anything that we had.
Mm-hmm. That was the self-titled?
Yeah, yeah. And it was the four-song EP, plus the follow-up two-song single, plus a bunch of odds and ends that we had done sort of as one-offs in the studio. Mm-hmm. That never made it to record or previous to that anyway. Pretty much anything we could gather from the Michael Penn sessions, mm-hmm. we put on there too. In fact, Michael compiled them when we told him that we were putting the album together, and he said some of them, the tape was decomposing.
Oh yeah, the oxide falling off.
Exactly. He said the spin he did to transfer it might have been the last one it was going to make it through. In fact, when he gave us the reel to take to master, he labeled it salvaged from rotting. That's what he called it. So that became the eponymous, that first album. I think it's 17 tracks. And it included, the 17th song was called Podmoskovnaya Vechera, which is a pop song in the Soviet Union around 1960. Mm. But it was a slow, I think, sentimental song. And we sped it up kind of, I don't know what you would even call it, klezmer or something mm-hmm. style. And did it. It sounds sort of like a novelty, and I think it's maybe four verses, and I think we did maybe three of them. But it was all one take. I remember that. No punch-ins, no retakes, just everything in one take. So I think we did one of those Her Majesty things like from Abbey Road where we waited a minute or so after everything else had finished, and we put that as a tag on.
Yeah, the hidden track.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the first album. The second album is called Even My Eyes that came out in... second one was 96, and it was a four-song EP we had put out in the intervening years. Mm-hmm. We called it the Holy Land EP, I think, four songs. And then there were some sort of solo things I actually did with Jeff Peters, the ex-Beach Boys engineer. We recorded them up in Santa Barbara, and they really weren't meant as Skooshny songs. They were just me and him, basically, and they made them onto the album. And then there were a couple that Bruce and David had done, I think, as sort of their solo or duo project. Mm-hmm. That might have been it. So I guess in a sense that was a compilation of Skooshny plus a couple side projects. Mm-hmm. And then there was another album came out in 2001 called Water. I don't think it was recorded as an album per se, but it was a string of sort of one-offs we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next, we'll hear the lead-off track from the Water album, a song called Flaw.
Human faces and the Lord of Melancholy takes us through our paces, breaking every rule of thumb. We smash the last of China's plates, walking softly through the rice fields, ear and finger lengths. You were touched, you were clawed, I was amazed. But now I'm awed at how our love is flawed. Now our love is flawed. We split the rent and share the air. For accidents we set off flares. We wonder why we never marry. We're sadder than a cemetery. You were touched, I was amazed, but now I'm awed at how our love is flawed. Now our love is flawed. Latex wrapped in cellophane and multicolored currency. You take the vows of poverty, a self-fulfilling
recently. You've done the project Son of Skushny.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all solo?
It's either solo or duo, depending on how you want to look at it. Mm. I certainly didn't do everything on the albums. I primarily do what I did in the Skushny stuff, which is my pick and strum rhythm stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the lead vocals. They're my songs. I mean, I wrote the songs, but in the studio, in the Skushny days, I did a lot of the backing vocals too.
Mm-hmm.
But on the solo stuff, I did some with Jeff Peters.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the harmonies, and we might have had a guest or two do keyboards or bass or things like that. Son of Skushny is me with Jeff to begin with. And then over the years, I started working with Steve Reffling, who's a multi-talented.
I've heard the name.
Hey, yeah?
Did he work with Martin Luther Lennon?
Yeah, he did. He's, as I say, multi-talented. I mean, he's a great engineer, producer for various artists, including myself. He fills in with any instrument that the artist doesn't play.
Mm.
So on my stuff, as I say, I'll do the rhythm guitar and the lead vocal, maybe a few rhythm guitars, you know, various acoustic textures. And he'll do the backing vocals, electric guitars, bass, drums. He's not a drummer per se, but he can play drums and does a good job at it. He'll play a cello if needed. And then we'll have a guest keyboardist from time to time. Jason Stasek is a friend of Steve's. It's great for me working with Steve because, as I say, everything I don't do, he does, and he does a great job at it.
Yeah, the album and the EP are really lushly produced.
Yeah. Ooh. He's really into layers. I mean, to me, they have kind of like a Jeff Lynn production feel.
Yeah.
A lot of acoustic and electric textures. Mm. And yeah, I love what he does.
The most recent release is last year's EP, Vincent Mod.
Yes, yeah.
Are those all new tracks?
Those are, you know, relatively new. I mean, I put out the album Lover's Leap of Faith in 2010. And that was a compilation of sorts also. It was things I had done solo over the years, including the tracks with Jeff Peters. And there were actually a few old Skushny tunes on there too. Mm-hmm. The ones I had mentioned where they were really done as kind of solo projects during the Skushny hiatus, yeah. But we had pulled them into the Skushny, one of the albums, I don't remember. But I thought that they had been sort of underexposed, and that because they were really were solo recordings, that they should come out in the Lover's Leap of Faith album. So in the intervening years between 2010 and 13, when Midsent Mod came out, I wrote those five songs and recorded them with Steve.
There's so many great pieces of ear candy on that EP.
Okay.
I think it's my favorite thing that you've done thus far.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
What's next for you?
I'm working on a single now with Steve. It's almost fully recorded. Everything's on there now except for Jason's Hammond B3 part. But that's in line, and then Steve's going to do some harmonies, and then we'll mix it, and that'll be done. I'll put it out as a single.
Okay.
Yeah.
It actually might be up by the time this podcast goes up.
That'd be great. If it is, you'll be the first to have it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And sure enough, here's that single, released just 2 weeks ago at sonofskushny.bandcamp.com, a song called No Ho.
Go for the gold, but you're not ready. Mission Boulevard, we'll find a place in the shade. You know.
We thought there was going to be a tribute album, that Vibraphonic Records was going to do a tribute album to the Bee Gees. They did one, but they were going to redo it and with different songs. And we chose a great Robin Gibbs solo song called Saved by the Bell.
Okay.
And I love the version we did of it. That tribute album never came out, and we never released it. When Robin Gibb died, Ugly Things magazine did a really nice obit for Robin, and I was very honored that they put our Saved by the Bell track on the page. So it's only available, I mean, online for streaming.
Okay.
But it was also on the page with Everly Brothers, Roy Orbison, who I haven't mentioned, who was another huge influence on me. He's on that page, and a few others. So for me to be included in a tribute to Robin Gibb, who was one of the best vocalists ever, most distinctive and best vocalists ever, along with the Everly Brothers and Roy Orbison, was
that's good company.
Oh, the best. One of these days we'll get that released as a single or an album track or something.
Taken from that obituary on the Ugly Things website, here's Skushny's gorgeous rendition of Robin Gibb's Saved by the Bell.
Save
the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider doing any live shows?
Yeah, I would. In a lot of ways, I regret not having done it because I think our popularity would be much more than it is. I've neglected to mention in the chronology, we put out a best of compilation in 2004 called Zolota, which means gold in Russian. It was kind of a self-deprecating joke, you know, as if we ever came close to putting out gold records. And I should mention the guys who put it out, Jonathan and Dennis with Vibraphonic Records. They have a band, a pretty well-known indie band called The Jigsaw Scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they're very good. They're not talking to me anymore because we had a bad spat, a bad falling out, but I wanted to give credit to them for getting behind us and putting out the best of collection. And after that came out, we were approached by a promoter in the Netherlands who really liked our stuff and felt confident he could put together a tour for us, you know, one of those van tour there. And I thought, you know, if we're ever going to break into this live thing, I'd much rather do it there, see Europe, play for an audience where I think we'd have a better following than to do it in the States, you know, competing against all the other LA bands that are having their friends come out on Tuesday night. You know, I thought, let's do the... And I was into that. We actually talked about rehearsing and who we take over there and what the song list would be. And it just didn't happen. It kind of fell apart. And what I consider now, I think it'll be the same thing. If somebody really got behind it enough to the point where they think they could pull it together, I would consider it. But on my own, I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for you. Thanks for coming out to see me.
It's my pleasure. I really appreciate your interest.
I'd like to thank Mark for his time, and also thank Rick Vittenson, not just for introducing me to Skushny, but for making it possible for two fellows without driver's licenses, such as Mark and myself, to meet. For more information, you can visit Skushny.com, and you can download much of the back catalogs of Skushny and Son of Skushny on either iTunes, CD Baby, or Bandcamp. Be sure to tune in again next week, when our topic will be angels. This is Charlie, signing off.